actually picking up our body heat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and moving in response to our motion. So it's kind of tilted to face us now that we're, you know, and now if we move over to this side.
Oh, I thought it was moving on its own. That is even cooler.
So it's responding to our motion. So the idea here is that, yeah. I sold pencils in my elementary school class. When I was in fifth grade, decided to start a business checking people's tire pressure. I used to be a wedding photographer. I was really focused on like optimizing the software part of this, right? I was about to finish at MIT. I was doing a PhD there, a PhD in media arts and sciences. I felt like we were at the beginning of this emerging field of experiential design. Designing experiences for brands was something that there were a few people doing it, but it wasn't something that people were really familiar with. Pushing the bounds of technology in order to create a new kind of aesthetic experience. The Media Lab is corporate sponsored. So at the beginning, it was me full-time and a few other people part-time. So I came out of MIT knowing, you know, feeling really comfortable with the technology and the design side of things, but the running the business part of it was something that I really had to learn as I went. Started hiring people full-time to help out. As we're building these projects, we're constantly working on our process as well, trying to make what is inherently this very creative kind of problem-solving task, which involves, you know, doing a lot of things for the first time on each project. You know, how do you make that more scalable? I had put a video of a project on a website somewhere. A design agency here in Brooklyn saw that and said, hey, we're working on a science museum.
Put this video out and boom, you get a client. I mean, I think that's amazing.
I'm sure there was some luck involved. Like, question.
Could we pop that umbrella?
Sort of like hacked version of a technology that we had taken out of a toy. It tracked objects on a flat surface, and we weren't able to license that technology at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
So we developed our own technology that did the same thing. 8-foot long table with an image of the periodic table of the elements, and you can put these electronically tagged pucks down onto the table to grab elements off the periodic table. The idea is to make chemistry more accessible to kids. Technology and design, and our strong suit is really at the intersection of these two. We really pushed the graphics on that, the whole interaction. We did all the design. That project was really well received. It won an award. It won Best Interactive Kiosk from the American Association of Museums, which is a pretty important award in that space. And away some of the rights, as I said, you know, learning as I go on the business side, you know, through some negotiations, get some of those rights back. And we did wind up doing a few more copies of that installation. And sure, it was a challenging time. It was during the, you know, the financial
crisis.
So that was definitely interesting. Introduced to people working in the fashion world here in New York. So started doing a lot of kinetic installations for Barney's New York. This came out of them, and so it was great for publicizing the studio. Fashion in terms of the clothes that you wear. There's also fashion in terms of technology, where people are always looking for something new. Been to Shanghai, Singapore, Sao Paulo, Montreal, Toronto. Really enjoy when we get to travel for a project. It can make executing these projects a little bit more challenging because we bring a lot of weird stuff with us, and all of that stuff's got to get through customs. You need to find some kind of exotic electronic component that can definitely make life interesting. Oh, I haven't raised funding, and you know, that's something I might do differently. I wanted to have full creative control over where the company was going without having to justify my decisions. It's good to have to justify your ideas to people who have you know, money on the line. The work we do is funded by the profits from our own project. Future of buildings, you know, spaces where we live and work, see these spaces as being totally interactive. We think that this is something that's inevitable. Our goal is to be at the forefront of setting people's expectations for what those spaces should be like. Actively working to build more relationships with architects and real estate developers, people who create spaces, you know? Robots that basically move under computer control on this table. Here, but here, if you touch the screen,
Woo! They'll... Wow, this is...
bite that I showed you, Lyft, is something that we're currently working on UL approval for.
UL,
so Underwriters Laboratories. That's if you're gonna design a product, it's usually got to have UL certification.
What ways do you think you've grown as an entrepreneur over this journey?
Oh, that's a great question. Probably the area where I've grown the most is leadership. I motivate a team of people and unite them around a common vision. You build a team, the team is in stressful situations, right? And so how do you manage that conflict in a way that's constructive for everyone? I used to be really afraid of conflict, and to learn that is something that started with my business, but it's helped me in every aspect of my life.
Hello, startup hunters. Thank you guys so much for listening. This podcast would be nothing without you. And also, this podcast is a startup, so I need all the help that I can get. Would you please leave me a good review in the App Store? This would be huge. That's it. On to the episode.
Welcome to Startup Hunter, also streaming on YouTube. I am here with James Patton of Patton Studio, and they are an interactive art installation. Super cool stuff. Look at this. We have LED Stegosaurus fins right up there that move on their own. There's a robotic arm over there. There's really cool stuff. So where should we start, James?
Maybe to start, I can tell you a little bit about the background of the company, what we're all about, and then I can show you a few different things that we're working on here in the studio. Does that sound good?
Yes. Okay.
So in general, why we do what we do is, if you think about what a typical startup is doing right now, they're developing some kind of new technology that they're sure is going to take over the world. And as we see, more and more technology in our day-to-day lives, the design decisions that are made that, behind that technology are playing a larger and larger impact in, the way we live our lives from day-to-day, right? So think about the cell phone, think about how dating apps have changed, just the act of dating. These are just two examples. But this trend, as this technology becomes increasingly ubiquitous, the design decisions that are behind all of these technologies that we use are just going to affect us in a stronger and stronger way. Mm. And so we think it's really important to put examples of how interactivity should be in the world. Uh-huh. We have a set of design principles that motivate everything we do about what interactivity in the physical world should be like. So most of the work we do is for either architectural spaces, we work with architects and real estate developers, or for brands. So we build things to help people feel connected to a brand or a place.
Some of this stuff looks like it would be in an IKEA commercial, like a Rube Gold, some cool commercial with just these really cool devices.
Right, so I can tell you a little bit about each one. So this is
this thing. How about this angle?
So I don't know if you're gonna see too much from that angle. It might be better from the side.
Yeah.
So this is moving. It's actually picking up our body heat. Moving in response to our motion. So it's kind of tilted to face us now that we're, and now if we move over to this side.
Oh, I thought it was moving on its own. That is even cooler.
So it's responding to our motion. So the idea here is that, yeah. So basically, if you think about a typical interactive experience you would have, say with your phone or something like that, you push a button and it does something. And we're interested in a much more nuanced form of interactivity that lives out in the physical world, that's sensing and responding to you, but not necessarily in a way that, demands your constant attention.
So which one should we look at next?
So this is a test piece for a project that we did a few years ago. This is called Patterned by Nature.
Uh-huh.
This was a collaboration between our studio and Hypersonic, Plebeian Design, and SoSo Limited. And this is one section of a 90-foot long liquid crystal ribbon display
Didn't you say it was four stories tall? And
it's four stories tall.
In North Carolina.
Right.
Is it still there today?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So where in North Carolina can you go to see it?
The North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences.
And that's in
Raleigh.
Raleigh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool.
Okay, and I'll show you one more here.
Now this is the really, this.
A bunch of robots that basically move under computer control on this table. So let me just turn these guys on here.
Now is this a game or?
So this is a hardware platform. You can develop applications for it.
Yeah.
So what's gonna happen right here, these guys are just gonna drive around in a line. But in general, you know, you can use this for a wide variety of applications. The idea is to give physical form to information that's inside the computer. And, you know, it turns out that when you interact with something physically, it's using a different part of your brain, and it's actually a lot easier in a lot of ways. There are a lot of advantages compared to the traditional digital.
Am I allowed to interact with this?
Hold on one second. Let me switch to a different mode, and then you can interact. So we've just got a couple demos here that show you what the hardware can do. But here, if you touch the screen, they'll chase after you.
No, I'm not supposed to touch the physical.
You can move them around, yeah. But they won't really do anything. Here, they're just kind of chasing your fingers.
Whoa, so this is like a swarm of drones or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. This is... Now, what was the inspiration behind this, and how did this come about?
So I did my PhD at a research group at the MIT Media Lab called the Tangible Media Group.
Was Joe Ichito the founder?
No, this is before his time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the idea behind the work we were doing in the Tangible Media Group is, you know, it's all about giving physical form to digital information. And a lot of that, you know, if information inside the computer changes over time and you want that to be associated with some sort of physical object, then you need to be able to change the state of that object, right? And so this is intended as a general purpose platform to let you do that. So you can program it just like you would program a normal, you know, touch screen. But here you have this extra kinetic, tactile element that adds to it.
So look at this. I just love the gear wall. You know, this is your box of potential. And
yeah.
Is there anything else we should look at, or should we get going?
I can give you a quick glance into the machine shop, and then we can...
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So the work that we do here is part physical, part digital. So these are the kinds of tools that we use to do the physical part.
What's this gigantic?
So this is a Bridgeport mill. I'm not sure exactly when it was made, but it's older than I am.
And it's not CNC,
It's not CNC. We have a smaller, kind of lighter weight CNC router table here that we've kind of tuned and optimized for what we do. And then under here we have MIG and TIG welders. Kind of small versions of basic metal and woodworking.
What are the 5-gallon jars for?
That is for a project I'm not allowed to talk about. Yeah. All right. Shall we head out?
Yeah. There we go.
All right.
You were born in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. My mom was a high school English teacher, and my dad was a patent inspector.
For the USPTO?
Yeah.
So nobody in your family was really an entrepreneur?
No.
Okay.
No entrepreneurs.
What was the first entrepreneurial thing you'd ever done? Or, in your case, maybe the first project that you did that you sort of showed to the world?
Oh, that I showed to the world. So... when I was in grad school, all of our work was project-based. So I did a project called AudioPad.
Wait, nothing as a kid?
Oh, okay. Well, show to the world is a high standard when you're a kid.
Yeah.
My first entrepreneurial thing, I sold pencils my elementary school class.
Now, was this a program of like where they sort of said, here's the pencils, go sell them?
No. So in the office, the pencils were 25 cents, and I was shopping with my mom at Price Club, you know, kind of like Costco back in the day, and found a thing of maybe like 500 pencils.
Yeah.
And realized, oh, I can sell these for 15 cents, and still make a pretty big profit. So I asked my mom to buy me the pencils, and she did, and I just sold them in class.
What did you use the money for?
Buying more pencils.
did you just start your own pencil company, or did you buy something cool with it, or?
You know, I don't remember what I did with the money, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure. But I think it was more about the fun of making the money, to tell you the truth.
So did you have any other entrepreneurial exploits in your childhood or teenage years?
I'm trying to think. I when I was in fifth grade, I got this idea to...
Can we walk down
there? Yeah, we can walk down
there. Because I want this thing.
Yeah. I decided to start a business checking people's tire pressure. You know, I would go around this apartment complex that I was living in and try to get people to pay me 15 cents to go and check their tires and make sure they were properly inflated.
Uh-huh.
This was a horrible idea, as I'm sure you can imagine. Turns out most people aren't even aware that their tires need to be checked for anything.
Yeah.
A common response was checked for what?
Yeah. So that didn't go anywhere?
That went nowhere. Trying to think of any other businesses I started. So, after that, I pretty much started this like right out of school.
Yeah.
And that was my main, oh wait, I'm forgetting a big one. I used to be a wedding photographer.
Ah.
That was a business that I started with my ex-wife. We were like pretty big time on photographing weddings, while I was in school. And this was kind of a funny experience because I was really focused on like optimizing the software part of this, right? So, you know, like.
So were you doing photos or just the back end?
I was doing photos too, but a lot of the like back end web stuff too, auto-generate albums and coordinate all the stuff you have to keep track of when you're, doing lots of weddings.
And this was with your ex-girlfriend, you said?
My ex-wife, yeah.
Your ex-wife?
Yeah.
So was she the main photographer and you were sort of...
She was the main photographer, I was the assistant.
Yeah.
And I wrote all the software that I decided this wedding business needed.
And that's really interesting. So, and then you get into Patton Studio.
Yeah, so I was just about to finish at MIT. I was doing a PhD there.
What was your PhD in?
So it was at the Media Lab. So the degree you get is called Media Arts and Sciences. It's an interdisciplinary degree.
Yes. It's like a future lab, very similar to what James is doing now. I want to know, what did you do in undergraduate and what was your graduate degree?
So my undergrad degree was another interdisciplinary degree from the University of Virginia. I was in a program where you could just kind of make up your own major.
Uh-huh.
What I wound up with was pretty similar to a cognitive science degree. So
yeah.
Computer science, psychology, and philosophy. But I didn't feel like taking the class where you dissect lab rats. So I didn't actually qualify for the cognitive science portion of it. I got an interdisciplinary degree instead. That was my undergrad degree. And then I went straight from there to grad school. I got a PhD in Media Arts and Sciences from MIT Media Lab. And pretty much started Patton Studio right after that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So you graduate from MIT. I'm sure you did a lot of projects that were very similar to what we just saw in the laboratory.
Yeah.
Sort of
the
because what you do is not easy. And
that's true.
I'm sure it takes lots of skill and effort. And maybe these are sort of the prototype, ideas for eventually what you're doing. So let's talk about the founding of Patton Studio. What year did you graduate?
2006.
Okay, so you get a PhD in 2006. Did you stay in Boston?
Yeah, I stayed in Boston originally. I think we have to turn around here.
Yeah.
This is like a construction site. So I stayed in Boston originally and started the company out of my living room. So the motivation was, I felt like we were at the beginning of this emerging field of experiential design. Basically, you know, at that time, what you would find in terms of design studios doing work for big brands, it was, you know, print and web, TV, you know, this kind of thing. But the idea of designing experiences for brands was something that there were a few people doing it, but it wasn't something that people were really familiar with. And I was really interested in, you know, creating a studio in this space that was really pushing the bounds in terms of technology, right? And the idea is that, like, I mean, if you think back to, say, painting, I don't know if it was during the when exactly this was happening, but back in the day when, you know, like, painting was, to make a long story short, painting used to be a very technology-focused thing, right? Where it was like, you know, who's got the formulations for the paints that will give the most vibrant colors that will have the broadest range of colors.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so these you know, paint formulations were closely guarded secrets.
Right, like titanium dioxide.
Probably, yeah.
For white.
Exactly.
And interesting.
Exactly. And so, you know, so the idea there that I think is really interesting is this idea of, you know, pushing the bounds of technology in order to create a new kind of aesthetic experience or artistic experience, right?
Yeah.
And so that is the same sort of, you know, direction where we're aligned in terms of creating new technologies that enable these kinds of experiences that people have never seen before.
So what I want to know is, how did you get your first client? Who was your first client, if you don't mind talking about it? I want to know, how do you build a studio from the ground up?
Right, so one thing that was great about being a student at the Media Lab was that the Media Lab is corporate sponsored, and so as a result, you have a lot of relationships with people, mostly in the research wings of various, you know, large companies. So some of the first work that I was doing was for Steelcase.
What's that?
They build office furniture and, uh-huh. and a variety of, these days, increasingly technologies for use in office environments. And then from there, started doing some work for science museums. So one of the things that I had been putting a lot of time into developing was a predecessor to the table that you saw earlier.
Yeah.
That, you know, moves objects around on top of it. So version one of that just tracked the object. So this was, you know, earlier, like, this is a technology that we had designed from scratch, and it was, you know, previous to, say, the first version of Microsoft Surface, which is the big, like, coffee table thing.
So you said we.
Yeah.
So was it just you starting the studio by yourself? Was there somebody else involved?
So at the beginning, it was me full-time and a few other people part-time helping me out with, you know, with things here and there. So I came out of MIT knowing, you know, feeling really comfortable with the technology and the design side of things, but the running the business part of it was something that I really had to learn as I went.
Uh-huh.
And I would say I'm still very much, I expect to constantly learn in that department as long as I'm running the business. We're still small. There are five people out there right now. It was only, I guess, in 2011, I guess that's a few years ago now, I started hiring people full time to help out. And we're kind of constantly, you know, as we're building these projects, we're constantly working on our process as well, trying to, you know, make what is inherently this sort of, you know, very creative kind of problem solving task, which involves, you know, doing a lot of things for the first time on each project. You know, how do you make that more scalable? How do you make that so that, you know, not every person on the team has to understand all the different, you know, technical and design parts of the process.
So going back a little bit more chronologically, you were working on Steelcase.
Yeah.
And then you had did you already know the museums from the Media Lab?
So I had put a video of a project on a website somewhere, and that video had a few pucks that were tracked on a table and a projector pointing down on the table.
Yeah.
And
I think I saw it.
Yeah, could be. And basically you you bring those pucks together and one represents hydrogen and one represents oxygen. You bring them together and you get water. And so a design agency here in Brooklyn saw that and said, hey, we're working on a science museum in Chicago, which was the Museum of Science and Industry. Could you build us, you know, the real version of this?
Okay, so.
And I said, sure.
So do you think you were lucky there? Because it's like some people, you know, in starting a wedding photography business, there's first of all, I think in your industry, there's just a lot less competition. But B, you had refined your, you know, your technology to the point where it was accessible. It did something cool. It was cool. It was cool and hard. But and then you just put this video out, and boom, you get a client. I mean, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some luck involved. Like, question.
Could we pop that umbrella?
Yeah. So there was definitely some luck involved there. No question.
So you get this museum in Chicago.
Yeah. And at the time, the video, I had kind of, to shoot the video, I had used this sort of like hacked version of a technology that we had taken out of a children's toy called Ellie's Enchanted Garden,
okay,
which was subsequently bought by Lego and shut down. But the technology was really interesting.
What did the tech do?
It tracked objects on a flat surface. And so so each of these objects would have a different kind of electromagnetic tag inside. And so it could, you know, without using a camera or anything like that, it could, you know, tell you really quickly and accurately where these objects were on the table.
Wow. And it was mass produced and relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, but Lego shut them down. And so, and we weren't able to license that technology at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
So we developed our own technology that did the same thing. So one limitation of their technology is that it can only track 9 objects at a time.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to be able to track, like, you know, 100 objects. And so our technology was designed in a more scalable way. It overcame a lot of, you know, the limitations of this other technology in terms of the area, the size of the area where you could track and the number of objects you could track and this kind of thing.
Now, what did the final piece do?
So it's about an 8-foot long table with an image of the periodic table of the elements. And you can put these electronically tagged pucks down onto the table to grab elements off the periodic table and bring them together to cause chemical reactions. And whenever you cause a reaction, you see a video about whatever it is you made, right? Whether that's water or, you know, gasoline or whatever it is. And so the idea is to make chemistry more accessible to kids and help them, you know, sort of recreating part of the magic of a chemistry lab without having to worry about getting anything, you know, any kind of explosions or anything that would hurt you.
So the design agency, as you said, it must have made it look polished, made it look, you know, better than you could probably do on your own?
No, so, I mean, we think of ourselves as, you know, a studio that works both with technology and design, and our strong suit is really at the intersection of these two. So kind of understanding how to push the bounds of technology in order to make an experience more faithful to its design, and also understanding how to design in this space in a way that's really compelling with technologies that most people aren't familiar with. And so we really pushed the graphics on that, the whole interaction. We did all the design.
Uh-huh.
There was a video production company that did the videos, but you know, we otherwise pretty much produced the whole experience from start to finish.
So you get a first really, it sounds like, meaty big client to keep your company alive.
Yeah.
And did was that it? Like, were museums or people just asking you for installations? You know, was business gangbusters, or did you have to put more work in to grow your company?
So that that project was really well received. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Well, so it won an award. You want to go this way or that way?
Yeah. Let's just
this way.
Make
okay,
a loop.
Cool. Cool. So it won an award. It won Best Interactive Kiosk from the American Association of Museums, which is a pretty important award in that space. Unfortunately, I had signed away some of the rights to some of the IP when I had done this first exhibit.
Yeah.
I was, as I said, you know, learning as I go on the business side. And, you know, it turned out that I was able to, you know, through some negotiations, get some of those rights back. And we did wind up doing a few more copies of that installation and other installations that are inspired by it.
So your business almost could have been killed right there.
I'm a little more scrappy than that.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, honestly, at any moment, you know, the nature of a company like this is that, one or two bad decisions at any moment could mean serious trouble. Sure, it was a challenging time. It was during the the financial
crisis.
So that was definitely interesting. So from there, through a mutual friend, I got introduced to people working in the fashion world here in New York. So started doing a lot of kinetic installations for Barney's New York, a luxury fashion store here.
Right.
And that was interesting. That was a whole new world. And the those projects were, you know, very well produced. A lot of great videos came out of them. And so it was great for publicizing the studio. And then I'm trying to think what came next.
I literally think you are an example of if you build it, they will come, right?
Huh. Could be.
Which is sort of opposite, you know, but I think it's dependent on the cool factor, and your cool factor is really up there.
Well, thank you.
But if your cool factor is only medium, you know, right? Yeah. If you're just doing a cool music video,
right?
Just putting a cool music video out on YouTube is not enough to like, but you know, with your cool factor, I think it's just, it's even higher. So I think it's amazing.
Well, thank you. I mean, one of the things that I've learned is that there is a, in the same way that there's fashion in terms of the clothes that you wear, there's also fashion in terms of technology, where people are always looking for something new, and they think they're always looking for something better, but a lot of it is they're just looking for something new.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's kind of an infinite number of experiences that you can create in that space where people have this reaction of I've never seen that before.
So you're getting into Barney's, and New York is a global city, and if you're in major brands in New York City stores, so I'm curious, like, has your work brought you overseas?
Yeah, so we've been to Shanghai, Singapore, Sao Paulo, been to a few places, Montreal, Toronto, fair amount of places, usually big cities. I really enjoy when we get to travel for a project. It can make executing these projects a little bit more challenging because we bring a lot of weird stuff with us, and all of that stuff's got to get through customs. And then, you know, if you're trying to build something in a foreign country and you don't speak the language, and then you need to find some kind of exotic electronic component that can definitely make life interesting.
Right.
But so far, knock on wood, it's always worked out for us.
Super cool. Have you ever raised funding or?
No, I haven't raised funding. And, you know, that's something I might do differently if I had it to do over again. But at the time, I think we got to move out of this guy's way. At the time, I got the advice I got from friends was to really, you know, avoid doing that if possible. And so I did. And, you know, I wanted to have full creative control over where the company was going without having to justify my decisions to anyone. And, you know, that's led to an interesting path. I think you can make an argument in both directions. You know, sometimes I think it's good to have to justify your ideas to people who have, money on the line. But yeah, that's the decision I made. So no outside funding. All the work we do is funded by the profits from our own projects.
So you've been in business for like 13 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a while.
And like, where do you see, do you have anything even more ambitious you're working on? Something at a whole other level that you've never got to before, or, you know?
Yeah, so we really see, you know, the future of buildings, you know, spaces where we live and work, as you know, we see these spaces as being totally interactive. We think that this is something that's inevitable. And our goal is to be at the forefront of, you know, setting people's expectations for what those spaces should be like. So that they're spaces that people actually want to be in.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, being spaces that kind of overwhelm us and exhaust us. And so we're, you know, actively working to build more relationships with architects and real estate developers, people who create spaces, you know, to, you know, try to win them over to our point of view about, you know, hey, we really need to, if you create space with interactive technology, you know, as a key part of it, that's not about, you know, hey, you can check your email with a screen on the wall, but it's about, you know, just changing the feel of, you know, what it feels like to be in that space and how people experience the space, then that can really, you know, help them create spaces that people really want to be in and that they're really excited about.
Well, I really wanted to be in your space and I'm really sorry I had to leave it. Do you have any desire to take any of your technology and turn it into a product? For example, you know, something mass-produced that architects could use or something, you know, something
right
in that scalable kind of fashion?
Right, so the light that I showed you, Lyft, is something that we're currently working on UL approval for.
UL,
so Underwriters Laboratories, that's, if you're gonna, you know, design a product, it's usually gotta have UL certification. It's a safety certification.
Uh-huh.
So we're working on that so that we can sell it.
Cool.
So that'll be our first, you know, large scale product.
And hopefully we'll see it at the MoMA Design Store.
Yeah, hope so.
Which is where cool things tend to be. Yeah. Maybe it'll be on Shark Tank.
Yeah, you never know.
In what ways do you think you've grown as an entrepreneur over this journey?
Oh, that's a great question. So
that is the signature question.
So I think probably the area where I've grown the most is leadership. So, you know, understanding what it means to motivate a team of people and, you know, unite them around a common vision. That's an idea that was pretty much totally foreign to me when I started.
Because you were all by yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And
in your laboratory. You know,
yeah, and now it feels like something I do on a pretty regular basis. And you know, there are a bunch of things that are related to that in terms of managing conflict. You know, you build a team, the team is in stressful situations, there are different personalities, there's gonna be conflict, right? And so how do you manage that conflict in a way that's constructive for everyone? I used to be really afraid of conflict. And now I see conflict as an opportunity for people to you know, let you know what's on their mind, and as something that has the potential to be really constructive if it's managed well. And so that's something that, you know, I feel like the motivation to learn that is something that started with my business, but it's helped me in every aspect of my life.
I love it. Well, James, go to PattonStudio.com, and we're gonna link you up on all the socials right here.
Cool.
And thank you so much for coming
on. Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for coming by.